Our presidential election always draws intense interest worldwide, in part because who leads the United States has a significant impact on international affairs. And there has been a lot of talk about President Trump's first term. He has railed against China, criticized NATO, supported Brexit, and has called Vladimir Putin a friend, despite charges from his own intelligence community that Russia meddled in the 2016 election. His opponent, Joe Biden, played a leading foreign policy role as vice president in the Obama administration, and he's promised to restore American alliances. So we wanted to take a look at how other parts of the world view this election. And for that, we have with us NPR's Emily Feng in Beijing, Frank Lankfit just outside of London, and Lucian Kim in Moscow. Welcome to you all. And Emily, let's start with you. President Trump has focused a lot of attention on China, imposing tariffs on Beijing, blaming the spread of COVID-19 on China, and calling it the China virus. How are people and the government viewing the election there?
Well, I have to say that people are not paying as much attention as the government, but the government is closely watching because either outcome, whether it's a Biden win or a Trump win, means a tough road ahead for China. If it's Joe Biden, we will have a more stable, predictable foreign policy with China, but many of the moderate and foreign policy economic advisors I talk to here are hoping for Biden because they think he's willing to play by international norms. But Biden is also aiming to build up U.S. alliances again with Europe, and he's seeded his foreign policy team with China hawks, so it's not going to be easy for China if Biden wins either. But with Trump, China sees a big risk. Another 4 years could mean more sanctions on Chinese firms, another trade war, friction over Taiwan, for example. At the same time, Chinese nationalists here see an opportunity because they see Trump as destabilizing the American-led world order, and that gives room for China to rise. So Chinese government is preparing for both outcomes, and they know that neither administration will be friendly towards China.
Lucian Kim, what about Russia? People actually might remember that meeting in Helsinki when President Trump refused to criticize Russian meddling in the 2016 election. How has Russia and Putin benefited from the Trump presidency?
Well, the short answer here is no. Relations were bad at the end of the Obama administration, but they are really horrible now. Consulates have been closed. There have been diplomatic expulsions. And according to President Putin, the U.S. has tightened sanctions on Russia 46 times during the Trump presidency. Trump is also the first U.S. president since the end of the Cold War not to visit Russia. His administration withdrew from one arms control agreement, and another one, another key one, runs out in February. So, yes, you know, the conventional wisdom has long been that the Kremlin likes Trump, but I think the blowback from the 2016 election interference was really unexpected in Russia. People here thought Trump would bring an improvement in relations, and that's just not happened. Perhaps the only upside here, and Emily also alluded to that, is for the upside for Russia is that under Trump, the U.S. has become more isolationist and focused on its own domestic problems, giving the Kremlin an opening on the global stage.
What would a Biden presidency actually mean for Russia?
Well, I don't think this counts just for Russia. A Biden presidency would bring back an element of predictability to the bilateral relations. Biden is perceived as being anti-Russian here, but at least his positions are well known. The Kremlin is now really focused on extending that last arms control agreement. It's called New START. It was negotiated by the Obama administration, and it's something that Biden has indicated he's ready to renew. Of course, the Obama administration famously tried to have a reset in relations with Russia. I don't think anybody here expects that to happen under a Biden presidency. I think the Kremlin is treading very carefully here. They realize Biden has a very good chance of winning, and Putin has reiterated over and over that he's ready to work with whomever the American people choose.
Let's go to Frank Lankfit in the UK. Frank, President Trump supported British Prime Minister Boris Johnson in Brexit, which Joe Biden opposed. How might a Biden victory actually impact British politics?
I think fairly significantly, Tonya. For one thing, I think it's expected to delay any U.S.-UK free trade deal, which is a thing that Boris Johnson touted. Like, why do Brexit? Well, we'll be able to get these great free trade deals with other countries. That's not going to be a priority for Joe Biden. The other thing that's going to be interesting is I think it puts even more pressure on Boris Johnson to get a free trade deal with the EU before time runs out with Brexit at the end of this year, because he won't be able to turn around and get a deal with the U.S. And the economy here is not good. We're about to go into another lockdown. And so I think there are real there's a real impact. And just what I want to reiterate what Lucien said also is that the predictability, even though in some ways this will be bad for Boris Johnson, I don't think there will be many tears shed in Downing Street because working with President Trump was a headache. He was unpredictable. He insulted Theresa May in the past. And so I think that they would probably like to have somebody in the White House who felt that played by the usual rules and had sort of the same frame that past leaders in the United States have had.
You laid out some of the challenges regarding NATO and the EU, but President Trump has been a really huge critic of NATO and the EU. Can you break that down a little bit more, the breakdown of that relationship and how Biden presidency might change that relationship?
I think it would be quite different. I mean, President Trump sees the EU as a foe, as a competitor, even though it provides stability in Europe. And it saw some countries, certainly in NATO, as freeloaders, didn't pay enough on defense. Now, President Biden would agree with some of those criticisms of NATO, but he's going to be much less, he's going to be much more polite than President Trump, who would go to Brussels and insult people. So I think that there will be a sigh of relief in Brussels, no doubt, if President Trump loses and Biden gets the job. That said, some of President Trump's criticisms of NATO were absolutely legitimate, and the United States is now looking towards China, and there's a sense in Europe that countries there have to look after their own defense, that the idea of just always relying on the United States, the world is changing, the United States is changing, and they will need in the future to kind of look after themselves more than they have in the past.
Hmm. Emily, I want to ask you a little bit more about the relationship between President Trump and the president of China. I mean, China's president seemed to be talking about President Trump when he told the UN General Assembly in September that unilateralism and protectionism won't work. What is the relationship between these two leaders?
It's complicated and it's become much more antagonistic. For Xi Jinping, Trump is a fickle character. One year, Trump calls Xi Jinping a good friend. The next, he blames a pandemic on him. But Xi, as I said before, sees an opportunity in Trump, an opportunity for China to rise above this chaos this year and build up its global influence. Xi Jinping recently chaired a big Communist Party meeting, which has ended last week, in which Xi said for the first time in a really high-level speech that this disarray we're seeing, a pandemic, Brexit, the possibility of a Trump re-election, portends what Xi and other officials have called, quote, major changes unseen in a century. In other words, an unprecedented decline in power that could let China benefit.
Hmm. The pandemic, of course, is, as you brought up, Emily, is so much a part of everything that is going on right now. Lucien, Russia has more than 1.5 million cases of COVID-19. What is the state of the pandemic there right now?
Well, in Russia, it's actually hard to get a clear picture of exactly what's going on. The government has a coronavirus task force, which publishes numbers on a daily basis. But especially the mortality numbers are contradicted by other official statistics. The big picture is sort of that Moscow, the most populated and the wealthiest part of the country, is somehow managing, but that a lot of Russia's far-flung regions are really struggling to deal with a rapidly rising caseload. The Kremlin is really determined to avoid a national lockdown. The economic effects from the spring lockdown were devastating, and the government wants to avoid a repeat of that at all costs.
Hmm. Frank, the UK, I mean, you all have a serious second wave and there's a new lockdown. How is the country reacting?
I think what's really strange, Tanya, is that we feel like we've been here before. I was listening to the Prime Minister's speech on Saturday. He was using the same phraseology he used back in March. And so I think this frustration is how do we find ourselves back in this? And I think part of the reason is social distancing was not followed very well. Things were really open in the summer. There's also research that shows that people went traveling to Spain and throughout Europe and brought a variant of the virus back here. So the United Kingdom will be in a lockdown for at least England for just a month, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But it's bracing. It's going to hurt people economically, and frankly, it's going to be depressing for people to go back inside.
That's NPR's Frank Lankfit just outside of London. We've also been speaking with NPR's Lucien Kim in Moscow and Emily Fang in Beijing. Thanks to all of you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.